If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to episode 198 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, we've reached the overreaction part of the season where we're 5-6 games in, everyone's panicking for one reason or another, or putting players in Hall of Fame. What is your favorite early season overreaction so far?
Probably the Corbin Burns theories, I guess, that Corbin Burns is trash, that there's all kinds of things made up wrong with him. I don't know. I mean, yeah, the velo's down a bit, but my theory is that he had the crap going in arbitration. He don't want to be in Milwaukee, but I don't think that affects his performance. He's going to bounce back and be fine. But man, it's so many. Do I drop this guy? No. Like, let's take a breath. We're only a week in at this point, so it's going to be okay. It's a long season. This is not fantasy football where we drop players after 1 week. Like we're talking 162 games. So I know it's hard. Everybody wants to do it. Yes, you should have some spots to churn, but we're not dropping any like stud players. Like if you drafted a player in the top 100, you shouldn't even think about dropping them right now.
This is like low key one of my favorite times of the year because of this, because it's actually pretty comical just seeing all these overreactions. Should I trade this person for this person or should I drop this person? It's like, what's wrong with Corbin Burns? Does he suck now? Okay, no, he doesn't. Like he had a rough two games, absolutely, but yeah, he'll be okay. He's been, you know, arguably the best fantasy arm over the last three seasons. So not time to go off the deep end with some of these players, but we will talk some disappointing arms, including Corbin Burns, some guys that are starting hot, some intriguing names in general, a lot of fun players to talk about today. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at AirCross04, and our show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Check out my Patreon for more work from me and Chris's Substack for more work from him. And before we get into the show, we want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you sign up using the promo code Toolshed, you'll receive a 100% deposit match up to $100, and they can be used for any of their fun fantasy games, MLB best balls, individual player pick-ems. I know Chris and I have been doing a ton of those already. A lot of fun across all sports and so much more. Set up today using that code Toolshed at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-toolshed. All right, Chris, let's start with a guy that pitched an absolute gem day, Jesus Luzardo against the Twins, not the Mets. I incorrectly tweeted about the Mets that he was facing today, but it was the Twins. 7 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts. 41% CSW and whiff rate. Just looking absolutely dominant. The changeup was really, really good today, which was nice to see. My thought is that we've seen Luzardo at times pitch like a fantasy ace, just not consistently, right? Do you think this is finally the year, Chris, that he gets up to that level where he's considered an ace in dynasty leagues?
I think it's just a matter of health for him. And we've seen him throw at a high level before, but just not shown the ability to stay healthy over a full season. So if he does that, then he's certainly in that conversation. I think he's well on his way to being a top 20 arm based on what I've seen this year. I mean, he just looks like a complete stud and the velocity's up. Like that's obviously a huge deal. Already had good velocity, but we're talking about an increase there of, you know, mile an hour on the four seam, and he's up 1.6 on both the changeup and the slider, which is awesome. So that, I don't know, I'm just looking across the board and that arsenal is just incredibly good. And when you're missing bats with the fastball like he is right now, and you have the slider and changeup to pair off of it, then you're going to succeed because the changeup is elite. I mean, he has 64% whiff rate against it today. The forcing out of 32% whiff rate, which is incredible. Like if you're getting 30% plus on your four seam, then like I said, it sets everything up to excel. And that's what I think is going to happen. I mean, you know, he's throwing in the zone enough. He's getting enough chase as well. So that's encouraging. Missing bats, the velocity, the movement, just he's confident on the mound. And because of that, I think that he will excel. Now, on the other side of him today, I think it's worth noting is Pablo Lopez has also just been incredible with what he's doing. He's added a new sweeper as well, and the four seam is up 2.5 miles an hour. This has been two starts now that we've seen this, using the sweeper the most of any pitch, and his four seam being up that below still. I think Pablo Lopez is putting himself in a conversation to be a high-end SP2 with these changes that he's made, with the improvements that he's made to his pitches that he already had and adding that sweeper. Lopez and Luzardo was an awesome matchup to watch today.
It sure was. And who hasn't added a sweeper is my question. It's what all the cool kids are doing. If you don't throw a sweeper, you're not going to be in the cool kids. Like I said, at the cool kids table at lunch, you know, so you'll be an outcast. But yeah, this was a great pitching matchup early season. Lopez versus Luzardo, absolute studly matchup here. Luzardo 20 swing and miss and Lopez 15. Yeah, I think one pitch with Lizardo that was kind of an issue in the past with that sinker. It's like he's only throwing that a little under, you know, about 6% of the time today, only six times today, and then 99 pitches going the four seamer more. Seems to be working. You see the velocity's up in all of his pitches. And that 2.3 on Lopez, that is huge as well. 1.5 on the sinker. So, yeah, both these guys are definitely trending up right now. A couple other names here in the National League East from your Atlanta Braves. Chris, what do you think about Dylan Dodd?
Yeah, so Dodd is a command specialist. He honestly has a lot of similarities to Jared Schuster, but Schuster didn't look ready for his first start, and Dylan Dodd did. So with Dodd, it's just kind of what you see is what you're going to get. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, the fastball is not overwhelming at 92, but he's confident throwing it inside. He locates it well. Like, he knows where it's going every time. Threw it for 73% strike rate, or 73% strike rate overall. He's pumping the zone. Just kind of across the board, it's like, all right, so the stuff plays up a bit because of the fact he's so good at locating the pitches. Now, it wasn't the most wowing start. You know, he had through five innings, one earned, six hits, but no walks and 3 Ks. So, you know, it's fine. It's good. I think Dodd kind of sets up to be a back-end type starter. And I think he could stick in the rotation. The changeup, the four-seam play well. I think those can be a solid pairing. The slider was good as well. The slider had a 39% CSW on it, which was good. He got some really good swings. He made Nolan Arenado look silly on it when he struck him out for his first career strikeout. It's, you know, he faces the Padres next. That's a tough matchup, but the Cardinals have a good lineup too. So we'll see what he's got. I want to see him throw the changeup a bit more because I think it's a good pitch. But I think he does stick in the rotation a while. And while I don't think he wows you with numbers, I think he is going to be a solid SP5 type of fantasy.
Now, do you think he can hold the spot when Mike Soroka's ready? Because he looked pretty good the other day. What are your thoughts on how this, the back end of this rotation kind of pans out once everyone's ready? Do you think Soroka grabs the spot? Obviously, it might be, you know, performance depending, but Soroka is definitely interesting. Like, you tweeted out the velo was up. You know, he looked really good, you know, the other day in his outing in AAA. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on Soroka for this year and long term right now?
Yeah, so Soroka is an interesting case right now. He started the game last night in AAA. He's actually going to be used some in the bullpen as well. He's really getting work in right now. We forget that he hasn't pitched since 2020. I mean, it's been legit 3 years since he's pitched. He did throw a little bit in AAA last year, but 3 years since a professional game. And the Braves really just want him to get work in. And so he's told he's going to be used in a starter role. He'll be used some out of the bullpen. They just want him to pitch right now. So I don't know how soon he's actually back. And I'm not actually sure the Braves push him because I don't think the Braves need to push him. So I would guess this is speculation they haven't really said, but with what they're doing with him in AAA, my best guess is that they roll when Soroka's in the majors, he's rolling as a long reliever and a spot starter because I don't think they want to push him and push his innings. I think basically the idea is they're going to build him up as much as they can, and then he's going to be ready to go as a starter in 2024. That doesn't mean he's not going to get starts in Atlanta. He will. I think he's going to get starts here and there, but I think we mostly see him in a long relief role because they don't need him right now. They have so much depth in this rotation. And right now, even with the injuries, I mean, right now you've got Max Fried out, you've got Kyle Wright out, and even still, there's, you know, they're covered across the board. So that's my inclination in my reading of the situation, is saying that he's going to get bullpen work and starter work in AAA, is that's what he's going to see in the majors. He's going to see some bullpen work, but he's also going to be a spot starter. So it'll be a year of just getting him back comfortable throwing a full season, because that hasn't happened since 2019. But I think we forget how good he was. He was 20 and 21 years old. So he debuted at 20 in 2018. He was 21 in 2019. Posted a 2.79 ERA between those two seasons, and that was 200 innings worth of work. Highly impressive. You mentioned the velo. And so last night, his sinker was up 1.6 miles an hour from 2020, and it was up a mile per hour from 2019 when he was at his peak. Slider was up 2.1 miles an hour from 2020 last night, and it was back to 2019 levels when he was elite. Now, Soroka was never a bat misser, he was more of a pitch to contact with the sinker and, you know, just put the ball on the ground. The slider was missing bats. This is AAA, so take it for what it's worth. But this lineup that he faced, pretty stacked. It's the Orioles AAA team. So a lot of really good bats they had in there, Norby and Westberg. You know, he did give up a homer to Ryan O'Hearn, who was a major leaguer for a long time. It's a pretty good lineup. So I'm not going to say he's going to come out and be a big bat misser, but I do think that the future of Mike Soroka looks really good. And the fact that he's overcome two Achilles tears on the same foot, plus this hamstring injury, speaks a lot of volume about him. So I'm excited about what Mike Soroka can do.
Yeah, with those two Achilles injuries, like after the second one, I think a lot of us were thinking like, man, is he ever pitch again? Like we've seen how Achilles injuries throughout all sports, you know, even like the one I always go to is Kobe Bryant in the NBA, like how long it can take you to come back from something like that. So, you know, I think right now, because of all that, all the time he's missed, and he's still only, what is he, 26 right now? Let's see, he won't be 26 till August. It's kind of weird. Like, feels like he's, you know, should be pushing 30 or something like that, but he's only 25 going on 26 here with a guy that had a top 10 Cy Young Award season. And I know that's not fantasy stat, but it's how good that guy was in his first full year. And that was after having only 5 starts in the major leagues going into that 2019 season. So I don't know. The bat missing ability is why I always ranked him a bit lower. Like I felt he was like a better real life arm than fantasy. But right now in dynasty leagues, his price is dirt cheap. And for now, once he gets back, I think it'll start kind of trickling up. But right now, I think he's a great target in dynasty leagues. And, you know, you guys got to stop having on the endless, you know, amount of pitching depth. Like, we're throwing out the right Cutter Crawford, and you just got to make Soroka chilling in AAA and Ian Anderson. And who else is down there right now? Who's the other one that's down there right now?
Elder came up, so.
Oh, he came back up. It's like, you got Elder, Schuster.
Darius Vines.
Endless amount of pitching depth out there. Must be nice, but yeah, kind of. I want to see how he does fit in. This year, like you mentioned, probably doesn't have a huge impact, but again, it's a great buying opportunity right now. And Dynasty is giving that pretty cheap price. Let's go over to some disappointing arms, though. We kind of alluded to one of them, Corbin Burnes. I mean, the overreactions are out there. Another kind of poor start today. And, you know, I have him on my home keeper league team along with Shea McClanahan. And I was looking at my team ERA. So I was at work, missed the first few innings of the games. And also my team ERA is like 7 for the day. I'm like, oh, Lord, which one of them was it? And it was Burnes. Just not looking good again. Just not missing bats really at all right now. Velo's down a little bit. I guess I'll give 1 to 10, Chris. How worried are you about Corbin Burnes? Obviously 10 being full-blown panic mode.
Like a 2. I mean, his velo's down. Like, sure, that does concern me a bit, but at the end of the day, he's going to be fine. I mean, we've seen him have struggles in the past, and he still overcomes it and still puts up elite seasons. It's easy for people to victory lap right now if you had Cole over him, but, you know, Cole's prone to his blow up starts too. Cole's looked great so far, but again, we're looking at 2 starts for both of them. So, I don't know what to tell you. I think Burnes is going to be fine, and I'm not worried at all. Like, yeah, is it a bit concerning that his velo's down? Yes, but I'm not reading too much into it right now. He'll bounce back and be okay.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it is him still getting used to the faster pitch clock.
That's possible.
He was a slow worker, so I wonder if, you know, if it's affecting these guys a little bit more than it would the guys that are quicker workers. It's not as much of a, you know, adjustment for them, so. Yeah, and then you mentioned with the whole crap, he was the battle with Milwaukee and arbitration, which just wasn't a good look for Milwaukee at all. But I think, yeah, slow start, sure. Velo's down a little bit, sure. I'm not worried at all. And I still think he's going to be an absolute stud, so.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
I don't know if any sort of any smidgen of a buy low opportunity arose in your dynasty leagues, I would hop on that because he's still my number one arm for redraft and dynasty leagues right now. The other two we have on here, though, I've been fading for a bit. And, you know, Jose Berríos, especially ever since he came over to Toronto from Minnesota middle of last season, his ERA after, you know, his blow up yesterday with Toronto is now pushing 5. And when, you know, when he was, you know, mid 3 ERA guy, having, you know, a 22, 23, 24% K rate, which is like, you know, league average or slightly below, it was okay. But now he's still a, you know, in that same K rate range and not providing any help with the ratios. So I don't know. I was never really a big Berríos guy in general, even less so after he made the move over to Toronto. This doesn't have, like, he's fun to watch. He has good stuff, but that doesn't always translate to higher strikeout rates. We've seen that with Dustin May plenty of times. So I don't know. I don't really see what the, you know, I don't really see him providing much value here moving forward. Like, would you want to buy low right now, Chris, or are you pretty much out?
Yeah, I'm pretty out. I don't know. I haven't seen anything that encourages me enough to want to actually buy in. You know, the weird thing is, I really dug in. Like, where did it all start going downhill? And I honestly couldn't really peg anything. It's kind of interesting, other than he started allowing more hard contact. That was really the only thing. But why? And I struggled to really find that. Like, I'm looking at his pitch mix. I'm looking at his velo and movement. I'm looking at his location. It's like, I'm kind of at a loss, honestly, of what went so wrong. But here we are. And, you know, the results are bad. And you got to imagine he's in his own head at this point. The four seam is just gets destroyed. Like, he really should just bag that pitch and not use it. I mean, last year, the four seam had a 349 batting average against, 11 home runs. His sinker wasn't much better at 317 against. So, and it's not, the XBAs aren't even that encouraging. He's been getting destroyed. And I don't know. I assume at this point it's kind of a mental game for him, and he just is struggling to get back to who he was. But the dude was so consistent year over year. It wasn't like elite consistent, but you knew you were going to get like a mid to high threes ERA every season because that's all he did until he didn't. You look in 2017, his first full season, 389. 2018, 384. 2019, 368. The short in 2020 was 4 even. 2021 was 352 ERA. Then all of a sudden, it just, the bottom just fell out and it was gone in 2022. It was just terrible across the board. He was a lock for innings and he was a lock for decent ratios. And so it's weird, but here we are.
Yeah, and I feel like, though, he got overvalued a bit, though. Like, he was definitely solid and like, solidly good, but he always seemed to be valued like he was going to take that next step, but he just never really did. Like, I think people thought he was a drop down to, like, you know, 3.2, 3.3 ERA, like 27, 28% K rate, kind of get up into like the Aaron Nola range, but that just never happened with him. And then going from the, you know, more so pitcher friendly AL Central over to the not so pitcher friendly AL East, where you got all these good offenses and all these hitters ballparks, that just was not a good match at all for him. And yeah, I'm pretty much out at this point. Like, I just did my, I posted my top 100 rest of season starting pitcher rankings over my Patreon today, or on Wednesday when you're listening to this. And I think I put him 99, and I didn't even feel good about that. Like, I don't think he's even a top 100 pitcher right now. There's so many good young arms in that range that are kind of on the up and up, that, you know, like guys like Kyle Bradish, who I think are probably better than him rest of the season, even though Bradish didn't look good and got hurt. But I just don't see any real intrigue in Berríos. Like you said, he just gets hit way too hard with both of his fastballs, and that is not a recipe for success right there. And this is not just this year. Last year, excuse me, four-seamer, 340 batting average against, sinker, 317, slug was 618 on the four-seamer. It doesn't miss bats. Even like his best pitch, which is now classified as a slurve apparently on Savant, is only, you know, about low 30s whiff rate type. So I just don't see a lot of upside here. I'm pretty much out. I mean, I don't have him, but if I did, I don't know if you could still get any value, like a, you know, draft pick or a, you know, maybe a top 100 prospect or something just because of the name, maybe. But I don't even know if you can get that at this point. What about Michael Kopech, though, Chris? Like, we've talked about him before, but he had a really bad first start. Gave up 6 earned in 4 2/3. Did have 5 strikeouts, though. But at the same time, like the K's just haven't been there. Like, you watched Kopech come through the minor leagues. He was, you know, the number one pitching prospect for some people at you know, 2017, 2018-ish. And he came up and he was really good out of the bullpen in 2021 for the White Sox, struck out a ton of guys. But that just has not been there as a starter. He's been 20-21% K rate or so. And given the breakers that he has, the slider and the curveball, especially that slider, even last year, 21% K rate on that slider. Never would have thought that watching him come through the minor leagues. You know, obviously he's had all the, you know, some injuries and off the field issues. There's a lot of red flags here, but again, he's still nasty. So because of that, are you willing to maybe buy low on Kopech? Do you think that he's going to kind of turn it around, or see another one you're kind of starting to get out on?
Well, the offseason, the coaching staff and Yasmani Grandal were like, Michael Kopech's stuff is legit. Like, it's the best we've ever seen it. Best shape of his life. Best arsenal of his life. And
I think you just started a new saying. So best shape, we've had best shape of his life forever. Best arsenal of his life. Everyone coming in the spring training, oh, he looks nasty.
Best looking arsenal.
He added velo. Oh, spin rates are up. I think you started the new saying there, Chris.
Maybe. We'll see if it sticks. But no, it wasn't there. His changeup looked good. Like, it had flashes of being really good, but it didn't really matter at the end of the day because he was hit around. You know, he gave up a ton of home runs. Yeah, just not a good outing. He was walking guys. He didn't miss bats. Like, it's not a good recipe for success right now. Kind of looking overall, just the four seam, just not there. And that pitch was a success for him last year, and that was getting beat up. And maybe it comes back to life a bit, but we'll see. It's one start, but again, it's like, how long are we going to wait on Michael Kopech? You know, he didn't get a single swing and miss with a slider. That's majorly discouraging. His changeup did get a 57% whiff rate, but again, he only threw it 15 times. So a small sample there, but it's like, okay, last year your highest whiff pitch was your four seam at 25%. So if he sticks there and the secondaries tick up, then that's great. But until I see that, which I didn't in his start, it was not a good start, then I'm pretty much out on him. I think I'm just going to continue to fade him and drop him even further down.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like you mentioned, he just can't miss bats. Like the command of really all of his pitches is just not there. Like the slider was really spotty and has been for, you know, a couple of years now. Four seamer, he just can't locate really anything right now, and that's an issue. And that, you know, we always think of movement being the, you know, kind of sole driving force behind whiff rates. And yeah, obviously movement, it plays a big factor, but you got to locate your pitches. You can't just be hanging sliders over the heart of the plate, and he just doesn't have it right now. So, and walks way too many guys. It's not a lot of stuff in there that I'm liking in this profile. Outside of, he might be fun to watch. He might, you know, be, you know, great arm to watch on TV, but that's about it right now. And he's just not going to be helpful to your fantasy teams right now. So again, he's kind of one I'm not fully out on, but I'm fading pretty, pretty hard right now. That is for sure. All right, moving over to some hitters now. Let's go over to some kind of young, maybe we could call these guys post-hype, because they're at the kind of point now where people are kind of wondering, should we still be really high on these guys? Or maybe we overvalued them as prospects and when they first came up. Let's start with Wander Franco here, who's off to a pretty hot start to the season. Where are you at on Wander? Like, he's been, I think, looking on Twitter in general, people talking about him, I think perception of him is all over the place right now. You still got that grouping where he's like, oh, he's going to be a stud, to be a fantasy first rounder. You got the others that are saying that he's just super overrated. He's going to be, you know, not a big power speed guy, maybe a better real life player than fantasy. Where are you at on Wander? And where do you have him in your rankings right now?
He's a really tough one to rank. He's hovered like around my top 50. And I wonder, like, sometimes, like, is that too high? Is that too low? The floor is incredibly high here. That's the thing to know with Wander. He's got some of the best contact skills in baseball. There's just no denying that. Across the board, elite contact. So that gives you a high floor. And the fact that he's going to put a lot of balls in play is huge. He has not swung and missed a ball in the zone yet. That's crazy. So he's 100% zone contact right now. 22 plate appearances, I don't care. That's still impressive. So home run, two steals. I'm wondering where the power gets to. I think that's the biggest question that we've got to figure out. It's like, is he a 20 home run, 10 stolen base type? Does he get to 20 home runs? And I think the jury's still out. But I'd say it's too soon to write off a guy that just turned 22. He was 21 when he debuted last year and was solid before he got hurt. I mean, we're talking 88% contact rate, 94.2% zone contact rate. I'm not writing this guy off yet. He's hit the ball harder this year. I think his home run to fly ball rate only ticks up. I think this is a 20 home run bat for sure. Beyond that, I'm not so certain, but I will say I'm confident that Wander Franco is a 20 home run bat. I think he can steal you 10 bases, and he's going to do it with a really good average. How valuable is that? That's the question we have to answer. Is there room for growth? Yes, 100%. So that's why I think it's really hard to figure out where to rank Wander Franco right now.
Yeah, because like you mentioned, where does the power of speed ultimately get to? And I wonder, is there much of a difference between, I mean, I obviously rank Wander higher. I'm going to take Wander over this guy, but a guy like Stephen Kwan, who's maybe a 310 home run, 20 steal guy, and looking at Wander's 320-10, it's like, I don't know why there's such a massive gap. Yeah, Kwan's not sexy. I get it. But at the same time, like, is Wander a sexy kind of profile either? Like, yeah, sexy hit tool. Absolutely a sexy hit tool. And this guy's going to probably hit 300 for his career. He's a 288 so far, and I'm sure this is bound to go up. He's off to a hot start this year. But I don't know. Is he just 320-10? That's really good. And if he's 320-10, then that's a top 25 guy probably. If it comes with, you know, a good amount of counting stats, runs and RBIs with it. I just don't know if – I just don't see him ever getting to that fantasy first round. But he's also not a bust. Like, I'm kind of in the middle right now. I think he's going to be a very, very good player. But I just don't see him as, like, an elite stud. I think he's going to be Ozzie Albies, maybe a little less home runs and a bit more batting average. I think that's where he's going to be at. And Ozzie Albies is going to be like a top 25 player for a bit now. So I think that's a fair range for him. The other two Detroit guys, Torkelson, Riley Green, both off to pretty good starts. Torque is just pounding the ball. Had a nice home run yesterday. He ranks high on, you know, I've been tracking I call him extra hard hit, super hard hit, and elite hard hit. 100, 105, and 110 mile an hour exit velos. He's one of the highest on there. I think over half of his batted balls have been over 100 miles an hour so far. I think that 9 out of 16, if I remember correctly. So I think we both were kind of on the buy Torque and Green, kind of buy low train here. But where do you think they ultimately get to? I think we both were in agreement on that they're great buys in Dynasty. But where do you think, you know, if they bounce back to where you think they can, where do you kind of think they'll be at in rankings?
So thinking about like Torkelson in the first base landscape, I think it's important to think about like how valuable do you need to be in order to rank high as a first baseman? So like the guys that rank high, it's like, okay, Vlad, obviously massive power, good contact and hit for good average. Pete Alonso, you know, he's 40 home run lock. He's been 40 home runs, you know, average 40 home runs the last 3 years. So Freeman, we know what Freeman's just consistent elite across the board. To be a top 100 dynasty asset as a first baseman, I think you need to do a couple of things. You either need to have 20 home run pop, 25 home run pop consistently, and that needs to pair with a good average too. Because if you hit 25 home runs with a bad average, like you're just, why not just go get Rowdy Tellez much cheaper? Tellez will give you 30 home runs in a whatever average. I could go get Ryan Mountcastle. Like, the floor to rank high as a first baseman in dynasty rankings is really high, and you have to excel in a couple categories. So for Torkelson, that'll need to be the power coming up, obviously, and we'll need to see the batting average come up as well. Do I think both those things are doable? Absolutely. He's going to provide no speed. I think we know that. But the power, like, he's run into some bad luck, I would say. He's hit the ball really hard. He did hit the ball hard all spring. There was one game this spring where Torkelson had two batted balls that had expected batting averages of 980 and 990 that did not go for hits. It was like a bad string of bad luck, and it's kind of carried over.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But so far, we've seen 16 batted balls. He's at two barrels. He's at a 56.3% hard hit rate. He has a new career high max EV, which is great. The high end exit velocities are really good, but he's hitting the ball on the ground too much. Yesterday, he almost had two home runs. He hit the big one, and it was a really good pitch from Ryan Stanek. Just happened to be on that game at the time. I was kind of flipping through games, and I just happened to be on the Astros and Tigers game, and I saw that. And the other one, I caught later. I went back and watched the condensed game version, and he hit one off the Crawford boxes that almost went out. So I think we're talking about one of the most decorated college hitters of this century. He was that good at Arizona State. And sometimes it takes guys some adjustment period. I think people wrote him off too quickly. I think Torkelson's still a 25 to 30 home run bat. The batting average is the biggest question. I don't know what we see from him there. I mean, between last year and what we have this year, he's a 204 career hitter. It's 428 plate appearances. Is he a 250 hitter, or do we see him get closer to 270? If he's a 270 hitter that goes 25 to 30 home runs, then yeah, I think there's applause for him to be a top 100 guy. Then we're looking at like a Nate Lowe caliber. But if not, then what is he? Is he Tristan Casas? I don't really know. Like it's just tough to first basemen are really tough for dynasty because the floor's so high to excel.
Yeah, no, that's kind of where I was thinking. Can he get into that second tier? I don't think he's getting to that top tier with Vladdy and Alonzo and all of them. But does he get into that Nate Lowe? I don't know. I think Vinny P is kind of like in between tiers. Could be tier one, could be tier two. Yeah, but Nate Lowe's in that tier. I think Andrew Vaughn will be in that tier. Like 5 years from now, who do you think's gonna be drafted higher, Vaughn or Torque?
I think Torque. I just don't think Vaughn's gonna get the power we hope.
Yeah, badly. That's kind of what I've been wondering too. But I do think they're gonna be pretty close. But you know, when while I think Torque was a bit overrated as a prospect, you know, especially as you got to the upper levels. The metrics are there. Like I mentioned, he's been hitting the ball extremely hard. And as you alluded to, he's been hitting them on the ground too hard, which is what Jordan Walker's issue was. So he had his fresh career home run today, which is great to see. But the fact that Torque is hitting the ball really hard right now, keeping the K rate in check as well, which is, I know it's early, but 15% K rate, very encouraging to see there as well. So I do think Torque will bounce back. And I think he's going to be ultimately like 260 and like upper 20s home runs. He maybe gets in the low 30s certain seasons, but I think he can get into that tier two range of first baseman. And with Riley Green, he's hitting 348 those first 25 plate appearances, one home run, one steal, 23% barrel rates, but still, he's still kind of striking out a bit too much. Again, it's early, but K rate right now is pushing 30%. Where do you think he ends up? Like, I know you've been kind of definitely on the Green buy low, and I have as well to a degree, but I'm just with him, the K rate is just staying high, and that's a concern for me. But where do you see Green getting back to?
Yeah, so Green has always had the strikeout issues, and I don't think people were willing to acknowledge that as much. They kind of look past it as a minor leaguer. He had the K rate issues in the minors. We saw that before he debuted, and people just kind of wrote it off a bit. You know, it's fine. He still performed. The stats were still there. But I don't know. He's tough. The zone contact's good. There's a little bit of chase, and he doesn't make great contact outside of the zone. So those are the concerning things. He had a great spring. I think the power was certainly affected by him playing in Comerica last year. I think the new fence dimensions will help out there. And the other concern is the ground ball rate. It's a very small sample, but Riley Green has a 38% ground ball rate right now. He had 56% ground ball rate last season. Can that stick? Maybe. It's way too soon to tell. But if it does, it's worth noting. He's hitting the ball harder than he did last year. But I think you do have to acknowledge that the strikeouts will be there. Like, he's always struck out. he has since rookie ball. He had a 28% strikeout rate in rookie ball, 25% in low A, 24% in high A, 27% in double A, 27.5% in triple A. They've always been there. So that's going to be part of his game, I think, and we're just going to have to live with it. I think that what makes him a little bit more intriguing is the power speed aspect, where he probably doesn't have the power that Torque does, but I think that he is going to steal you 10 bags. And that's the encouraging part of his game. So we'll see. I think both still have question marks that need to be answered. But overall, I am encouraged with both guys right now.
Yeah, I think Green ultimately gets to, like, I don't know where I see the average. The average, I have a good idea where I see the power speed, but like, does he hit 250? Does he hit 270, 275? Maybe he's like in the middle, like 260, you know, 20, 25 home runs. You know, 10 steals. I think that's definitely top 100 caliber right there. How much counting stats to go along with it? That Detroit lineup is not good. I think the other day they already had like 11 total runs scored in 7 games or something like that. So they're hitting like 179 as a team or something like that. Yeah, they had to run into like McClanahan and Springs and all them the opening series of the year. That didn't help. But I do think both of them bounce back and they're kind of like in that top 75-ish range, kind of like the back third of the back of the top 100, I should say. So I think there's still some buying opportunities to be had with both of them. Next name here, Will Smith, let's go out and spend $150 on Will Smith and Fab after one random save. That's my favorite early season overreaction by far. Is like the random guys that get saves in the first like series of the years. People think that, oh, they're in the closing mix, but it was for, you know, some reason, like, you know, like Presley was dealing with, you know, a bug or something like that. So going out and spending like $100 or $200 on these random guys like Will Smith, and then, just, you know, that was a wasted Fab. So I think that's my favorite early season overreaction is the early season closer kind of rush or what they think is the closer rush. And I just never get in on that. But anyway, talking about the other Will Smith now, the Dodger catcher, who's just been one of the more consistent players in baseball the last 2 years, you know, right around 25 home runs, hitting around 260. But he's off to a really good start. 3 home runs, 10 RBI, hitting 421, 478, and 1,000 slug through his first handful of games here. Do you think, Chris, there's another level to be had? I've always kind of thought that, well, what Will Smith has been is very nice, right? Nothing wrong with a 260 hitting catcher. It gets you about 70 runs, 80 RBI, 25 home runs, and a good OBP. Nothing wrong with that. But can he get to like that, have that couple of years? And right now he's in, you know, age 28. He's in that, you know, alleged physical peak, physical prime years. Can he have like those handful of like really kind of big seasons where he's hitting like, you know, maybe mid-30s home runs and pushing 100 RBI? Maybe not, you know, a Sal Perez 2021 year, but do you think there's another level to be had with Will Smith where he can kind of jump up and be like a top 50 dynasty player?
Yeah, I do, actually. I really believe in his bat. I think he's already been one of the better hitting catchers in the game. And the Dodgers beat reporters saying the ball just sounds completely different coming off his bat. He's already had a new high max EV this year, which is encouraging. You know, he's had a barrel rate over 10% every season of his career, which is awesome. Had a 50% hard hit rate so far. He's just absolutely destroying the ball. The results are there, as you read the numbers. I think that there are going to be seasons where, and this could be one of them, where Will Smith hits you 30 home runs. And I think he's going to do that with a pretty respectable average, too. He's been pretty steady, 260 hitter. 2020, he hit 289. I don't think I expectation. 260 is about what I'd expect for him. But if he hits 30 home runs, those are some extra, you know, balls that are counting towards your average. So I think that this year, I think this could be the year that Will Smith hits 280 with 30 plus home runs. I think it's completely feasible to see. I mean, the bat's always been there, but I think there is that another gear that you mentioned where he can take that step forward. So yes, Will Smith has been at the top of my, like him and Adley are kind of like the top dynasty catchers. And I don't see that changing. I think Will Smith's going to be really good for a good amount of time.
Keep my catcher's name out your bleeping mouth. I couldn't resist. I was thinking of a joke. I'm like, is he smacking the ball harder than Will Smith smacked Chris Rock? I think he is. Yeah. But yeah, Will Smith, I think he's got that. And he's hitting, I think he's been hitting cleanup this year. So he always kind of has, but right in the middle of that Dodgers lineup. Yeah. I think it's easy to say that he's off to a hot start, but yeah, I do think this could be, you know, maybe a career year for Will Smith, where he maybe goes 30-100 this year. He's already off to a phenomenal start for a handful of games and all the metrics are there. You know, he's continuing to cut the K rate down, even start this season. So yeah, I'm definitely in on a big year from Will Smith, even bigger than the years we've seen in the last couple of years, which have been pretty damn good already. And go to let's keep it out there in the NL West. Xander Bogaerts, I think people were, you know, kind of down on Xander Bogaerts this offseason. You know, last year, it was a fine year, but the power just wasn't there last year, at least not to the same degree that it was in years past. And not to say he was ever a really big power guy, but it dropped off from where it had been. He only had, what did he have for home runs last year? He had just 15 home runs after being, you know, 2018, he had 23, then 33, then 11 in the shortened 2020 season. So he was on like a, you know, 30-ish home run pace then, back to 23 in 2021, but then down to 15 last year, though he still hit 307. And that was the, what, 5th year in a row above 285 and 7th time in 8 seasons above 285. Hasn't been below 273 since his second season in the major leagues, his first full year back in 2014. He's off to a nice power start as well. 3 doubles and 3 home runs through his first 6 games. And the metrics are there to, you know, back it up. 15.8% barrel rate right now. You know, K rate's still low, kind of always where it's been, 16, 17, 18%. Hard hit rate is only 32%, but he's just barreling the ball a ton right now. I think this is going to be a pretty big year for Xander Bogaerts. Excuse me. Still only 30 years old. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of a buying opportunity right now, Chris.
I think so, too, because I was one that dropped him a pretty decent amount, like towards the back end of my top 100. Yeah, he's a really good real-life player, but the fantasy numbers just hadn't been there for a couple of seasons. I mean, last year, 15 home runs and 8 steals. Like, that's fine. 307. So that's great, but you're just not getting much else out of him unless you're like, I don't know. So I was out because the power and speed was down. But I will say that he is looking to prove me wrong. As you highlighted these numbers, I think that we could see him have a resurgence. I don't think we go back to the 33 home runs that we had in the happy fun ball season, but I do think this reasonable to think Xander could hit 25 home runs. I mean, it was just 2 years ago he hit 23 in 2021. So I think 25 is realistic. His ballpark's not ideal for power. So somebody with fringe power like him, that's another reason I docked him. San Diego's not a great hitter's park. So I docked him a bit because of that. But he doesn't seem to care right now. He is raking. Like you said, the metrics back it up. So yeah, I think we could see a resurgence for Xander Bogaerts this year.
Yeah, he's just one of the better pure hitters in baseball right now. And I think he's going to be rejuvenized out there in San Diego. I think things have kind of gotten maybe a bit stale here in Boston. I hate to say it, but I think he's going to have a nice season, maybe one of his better seasons. So one of those kind of early 30s resurgent years for Bogey. And he's off to a great start, as mentioned, hitting 409 so far with 3 home runs, 7 RBI, and 5 runs scored. Speaking of guys that are tearing the cover off the ball right now, Yandy Diaz already has 2 home runs so far, and only Giancarlo Stanton has more batted balls above 110 miles an hour right now. Yandy has 4, Stanton has 5. I mean, the quality of contact has been there. Like the last couple of years, it was 40.6% hard hit rate in 2021, 49% last year, this year up to 66.7%. But he's starting to drive the ball in the air a bit more consistently this year. Again, super early. But a 16.7% barrel rate, only 4.8% last year. More walks than strikeouts once again this year. Is this the year? Like, we've been waiting for Yandy Diaz to break out in the power department for what feels like a decade now. And he is 31 now, which was a couple years older than I thought he was. I thought he was like 28, 29. But is this a year? Like, are you buying into this really small sample size of Diaz driving the ball in the air more consistently? Are you buying it, Chris?
Well, the funny thing is he's still rocking a 50% ground ball rate.
Right.
So it's interesting. He's always hit the ball hard. He's always hit the ball extremely hard, ranks really well in all power metrics. But the difference is that he just wasn't having barrels. Like, it was like he would hit lazy fly balls that just weren't good, or we would pound it on the ground. But this year, he's actually getting to some barrels. Yeah, I mean, it's early. It's two barrels and 12 batted balls, but it is notable. It is worth noting, because if he can consistently lift the ball, then there's easy 30 home run power in this bat. We just need less pop-ups. Like, here's the difference. And it's funny because StatCast actually is identifying it a lot different than FanGraphs. Like, FanGraphs has him at a 50% ground ball rate, and Savant has him at a 41.7% ground ball rate. Now, that actually was probably updated with Wednesday's games as we're talking right now, because Tampa Bay had finished their game already at this time. So it's possible that FanGraphs updates overnight. So maybe what we're seeing here. But he's at a pretty even split between fly balls and ground balls, which is great. And he's pulling it more. That's the other thing.
Yep.
Get to that poolside power. So when you pull it more, it's kind of like a Brian Hayes, where Hayes hits the ball hard, but he's just hitting these hard opposite field fly balls that aren't getting out. So when we're pulling it more, obviously, we're going to get to more home runs. I do think that Yandy is capable of hitting for a high average with good power. Last year, he hit 296 and he had a 400 OBP. He had just 9 home runs, though, because he hit the ball on the ground so much. So I think that this could be the year where Yandy Diaz finally gets to 20 home runs. He's never had above 14 in a season. But I'm going to say he hits 20 home runs this year and does it with a really good average, too.
You know what this kind of feels like, though? Like, remember when we were waiting for DJ LeMahieu to break out? And then he had that 1 year. What was it? 26 home runs in 2019. Then he went back down to the, you know, 10 to 15 homer bat he had been for his entire career. And he still only has that 1 year of 20-plus home runs. Though he's been, you know, obviously a very good hitter for a very long time. But this kind of feels like that. Like, I feel like he's going to have that year this year. And then people are going to draft him. I mean, if he goes like 25 home runs and hits for a high average, he's probably easy top 100 pick next year. Maybe even pushes top 50, and then he's gonna go back down to like, oh, hitting 290, but he has 12 home runs. He's pounding the ball on the ground again. But I'm glad you brought up the pull rate again. It's early, but pulling the ball more line drives. You know, the ground ball rate's been trimmed a little bit depending on where you look, and that has been kind of trickling down a little bit. I mean, 2020, he was at 66%. Then it was 52%, 50%. And according to Savant, you know, right around 42%. But quality of contact is definitely there. He's just pounding the ball right now. 98.9 average exit velo. Two-thirds of his balls have been hard hit so far. So, yeah, I've never really been a huge Yandy guy just because, you know, super high ground ball rate just really limited him. But if he can just get over 20 home runs with the average he has and, you know, he's being that lineup every day. So I think what he had last year, he only had 57 RBI, but you figure that was only with 9 home runs. You get him up to, you know, 20, 21 home runs. It's looking at probably 80 plus RBI guy, 80 plus runs with a, you know, high average, 296 last year, hit 307 in 2020. He's a career 278 guy with a great approach. So, yeah, I think like a 280, 25 homer a year with, you know, 160-ish combined runs and RBIs is definitely in the cards for Yandy. So, yeah, I'm definitely trying to, if I can get a couple of shares, like, you know, a win now scenario in Dynasty League, he's a great win now target because I think the price tag is still pretty suppressed. Like, these are the guys I love going after, like the early 30s guys that could have, you know, like a Max Muncy type or Yandy Diaz type. Those are good win now buying pieces right now. So I definitely would go and try to get some Yandy Diaz if you could. A few more players here to round up the show. You know, Luke Raley is someone you put on the list here to talk about today, Chris. I know you wrote him up, was either today or yesterday, I forget, over on your Substack Dynasty Dugout. What have been your thoughts so far on Luke Raley, and are you looking to buy him right now in Dynasty Leagues?
Well, I can't say that I expected it to happen like it did. I wrote him up in the Dynasty Fab article last weekend, and was like, he's just a deep league target. So I was like, I picked him up in Highlander. It was like it's a 20 team. I was like, 20 team or deeper, like pick up Raley, like strong side platoon type bat. And I didn't expect that he would just go off and have a 2-home run game and then home run, hit another home run the next day. It's just like, holy cow. Like, and when I suggested people buy him, like, he was hitting 143. It was like, okay, like, what's up with this? And then he starts the week off with a double dong and goes 2-for-4 or 2-for-3. And then the next game, he hits another home run again. Raley has massive power. Luke Raley's 9th percentile exit velocity in the minors last year was among the best of any minor leaguer. But he's a 28-year-old journeyman. So it's like, okay, like, who cares? Like, he had a 109.2 9th percentile EV. Who cares? He's an old journeyman. But just to put it in retrospect, where it would have ranked in the majors, that would have ranked 7th among all major league hitters. So ahead of Mike Trout, ahead of Pete Alonso, ahead of Austin Riley, ahead of Julio Rodriguez, like, you name it, like, that was where he ranked in those, you know, in that stat category. Hit the ball hard, and the contact skills are all right. I think there are contact concerns because, you know, last year just a 72% zone contact, which is not good if you didn't know. Like, that's pretty terrible. So contact concerns with big powers. Like, I'm basically like, all right, add him if you need somebody with power, and that's what he's shown. He's shown big power. And he's whiffed a lot. He's struck out a lot, but it's a bit of a mirage, I think. Like, he's not going to be, like, elite. He's not going to hit 300. But I think you're looking at a strong side platoon bat that could hit 240, but also gives you 20 to 25 home runs in a platoon. I think it's pretty strong. So, yeah, we look at Rowdy Tellez, and everybody loves him, but, like, this is kind of the profile I'm looking at with Luke Raley. So I think he's worth an add. Pretty much 15 team or deeper league. I'd see where it takes you. So I'm intrigued. I am a bit surprised. Like, when I wrote him up first, like, for the Fab article, I was like, I didn't expect this, but here we are. Somebody messaged me earlier. It was like, that was such a great suggestion. I was like, I cannot say that I expect this one bit.
Right. Yeah. I don't think anybody really saw this coming, but, you know, and we know that Tampa Bay loves the roll without those platoons, and you mentioned he's a lefty bat, so he'll be in the strong side of that platoon. So maybe he gets to stick in that role, and if he keeps hitting and mashing right-handed pitching, you know, maybe he gets to, you know, 450-ish plate appearances this year. And with his power, that I could easily see, 20, 25 home runs and, you know, an average that, while it won't be great, I think you can, you know, it won't kill you either. It'll be respectable, especially if you look at that, where you'd be rostering him. Like, we're not talking about 10 or 12 teamers. He's not on that radar yet, but 15 or deeper team leagues here, that'll definitely play. Get some cheap power that you can pick up for free right now. Don't have to pay a damn penny for him. So yeah, definitely a kind of a sneaky target right now. Okay, a couple more names here before we close up the show. I mean, Brian Anderson, who was, what did I call him in the past? Oh, Captain Boring. Like, he was always, like, solid, but never really stood out. But he's just tearing the cover off the ball early on in the season here for Milwaukee, you know, playing a little bit of the hot corner, a little bit of right field as well. Do you think we can see Anderson get back to where he used to be in Miami, or maybe even a higher level? Like, where are you at on Anderson? Is he a buy for you right now, or what are your thoughts?
I'm trying to pick him up everywhere. I mean, he's just swinging such a hot bat right now. And whether it sticks or not, I think it's still to be determined. But I think he's always kind of been, like, fine in the past, but we've never really seen him have the chance to perform over a full season. You look back in 2019, and he had 20 home runs in a decent year. And after that, it's just he never had the plate appearances. Even 2020, actually, I was looking at the numbers. I forget, it's a shortened season, but 11 home runs in those 59 games, pretty solid. So, absolutely just demolished ball off of Max Scherzer, which is pretty impressive. I think he actually hit both of them off Max Scherzer yesterday when he hit two. And, you know, overall, I would say that Brian Anderson is somebody I'm targeting because he may be boring, but I'll take a boring guy that I think could provide some sneaky good value this year. And he's going to play. I'm not worried about his playing time and losing at bats. It's not really anybody that's going to take his spot. And if he's swinging like this, then he's certainly not going to lose plate appearances. So I'm liking what I'm seeing from Brian Anderson as a late career kind of breakout guy here. This reminds me a bit of Brandon Drury last year is what I've seen.
Yeah, that's a fair comp there. Like I said, he's always been, and Drury was kind of had his moments where he was decent, but never really put it together for a full year. So you know, Anderson, he's got to get some playing time there in Milwaukee. So he can play the hot corner. He can play the outfield. That definitely helps keep him in the lineup. So, yeah, I think we're, well, I'm not like rushing to get him per se. I think there's something to be had here because he's been, you know, pretty solid major league hitter for a handful of years before the last couple where he was had some injuries and just poor performance all around. So, yeah, I think definitely a nice buying opportunity here with Anderson as well. And keeping it in Milwaukee for his rookie teammate, Bryce Terang. And you were one of the first people, you know, I heard that was really starting to pump up Terang last year, you know, kind of subpar, kind of uninspiring numbers leading up to 2022. But went up last year, 13 home runs and 34 steals, off to a pretty hot start in 2023 here, as are, you know, Joey Weimer and Garrett Mitchell as well. All three of the Milwaukee rookies are playing pretty well. But long term with Bryce Terang, where do you see him ultimately getting to, Chris? Like, I've kind of comped him to Nico Hoerner. Maybe there's a bit more upside there in the power to speed department than Hoerner brings. Maybe he can get to, you know, 15 home runs, or maybe he can get to like 25, 30 steals. I think there's more speed than Hoerner brings to the table. But where do you think Terang ultimately gets to? Is he a top 100 guy? Long term, maybe higher than that, lower? Where are you at?
I'm not sure he gets to top 100 overall, though I do think the profile is really intriguing. I'm not sure he's going to hit for the power that we've seen so far. Like, he hit the Grand Slam, I was like, oh, the power's here. I think he's going to be like an average power guy, and that's kind of what he was last year. His exit velocities took a major step forward last year, which is a reason that I was in on him. And funny, this, I'll never forget the tweet. This guy just came at me and was like, what, do you play in a four-team NL-only league? Why would you be interested in Bryce Terang? I just keep thinking about that, but I would never go back and say anything. But Terang had a sneaky good year. I mean, he was 22 in AAA, 13 home runs, 34 stolen bases, had a 286 average and a 360 OBP. The interesting thing is he had a 126 ISO, which isn't good. Terang, really good contact skills, though. That's what it goes back on. And just like I said with Wander, Bryce Terang is not swung and missed at a pitch in the zone. 100% zone contact right now. He doesn't chase often. This was his MO last year, too. This is exactly who Terang was. And for those reasons, like, there's a high floor. I mean, just because of the feel for contact. And he's going to put balls in play. He's shown decent enough exit velos where it's like, okay, like, if he hits the ball hard 38% of the time, then it's going to play. Like, he's got the speed. We know he's going to run. His sprint speed right now is 95th percentile. I should have shown last year he was 34 for 36 on the base pass. Like, that's just incredible. And that was, you know, we had already seen the AAA experimenting with those rules that the major league's working with right now. So overall, I do think that Terang's just going to be, I think the Hoerner comp's interesting. Hoerner hit, what, 10 home runs, stole 20 bags last year, somewhere in that range. So I think that Terang maybe has 15 home run pop. I could see that. So 15 home run pop, 20 to 25 steals, that may boost you near the top 100. Now I think about where we're kind of looking at it. So, you know, I don't know this. I think he's a sneaky good play. And I think that Terang's someone to add in all league formats right now. Probably too late to, you know, go out and trade for him, but you never know. You might could trade and still profit a bit in the dynasty format.
I think you still can because, you know, I don't know if it's a buy high necessarily, but I think if you're going and buying him right now, well, yeah, the price is obviously trending up, but I think we're both in the mindset that it's going to keep going up, that he's going to keep getting better and maybe get to that point where he could realistically flirt with top 100 overall value. Then, yeah, the price tag isn't at that point yet. So I think he could still be a decent buying opportunity here in dynasty leagues because, yeah, like, look at what he did last year. I'm definitely in on that. And this year, he's not striking out really at all, walking a good amount as well, super early on, but he's kind of doing everything that we kind of hoped he would. And coming from a, you know, second base spot where this profile is definitely going to play up, if he can get to even just like 10 and 20, I think that's going to be, you know, a top 150 player or something like that. And if he can get, yeah, exactly, top 150. And then if he gets, you know, a little more power, a little more speed, he's probably pushing top 100, especially if that comes with a 270 plus average and a solid OBP as well, as like he showed last year in the AAA. So yeah, I'm definitely on board here. And maybe he can even squeak out some dual eligibility for a little bit here, second base and short. We'll see how long he can hold both of those. But just from the second base spot in general, this is a pretty fun little profile for sure. I think that's going to wrap us up, though. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. And join us again next time for more fantasy baseball talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.